White Rocket Entertainment. White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 257. Hello, and welcome to On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast. This is the new show spinning off of the White Rocket Podcast because we've done so many James Bond episodes over the last couple of years that we decided to do an entirely new show just about James Bond. And tonight is the very first show. We're kicking off with what should be our regular threesome of Bond fan commentators. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined for this series by my usual co-host for many of our shows, John Ringer. Hello, John.
Hello, Van.
And for our recent addition to the White Rocket family, Jared Albrecht.
Howdy, howdy.
All right, so our Bond bona fides are all pretty well known. In the year or so that I've gotten to know Jared, I know that he's at least as big of a Bond fan as we are, and that's pretty impressive. We've been trying to stump each other with Bond trivia for like the last 3 months, and it's just like it's kind of an exercise in futility. You find something every now and then that gets me, and I find a tidbit every now and then you haven't heard, but otherwise it's kind of a futile exercise. So, well, what do you guys think about this new series?
The idea is that we're going to take a set of movies, kind of four at a time, and debate them as a group. Like the three of us debate those four movies and end up with them in a certain order. And so I like that because we're not comparing all the movies at once. It's a much smaller group, and I think we can more easily distinguish them that way and have some fun with it. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, this is what we're calling the World Cup of James Bond films. For those that don't know, and if those out there want to get in on it, I run a Facebook group called Secret Agents and Super Spies. I call it the Dragon Con fan panel programming track for me not able to go and run a programming track at Dragon Con. So we talk about James Bond and other super spy, secret agent movies, TV shows, books, whatever there. And about a year ago, we did a World Cup of James Bond films because we finally have 24, so we can have brackets. So what I did was I divided them up. I seeded them with the ones that are generally considered more popular as higher seeds and the ones that are not very well liked as lower seeds, right? And then I put them in groups where you had like a top seed, middle, and then bottom. With Spectre coming out, we have 24, so we're able to do this without any, you know, having to give a buy or anything. And then, we did that on the Facebook group. It went over really well. It was very cool. I liked how it played out. And so, I thought we would recreate that as the first thing on our first few episodes of this series. So tonight we're going to look at Group A and Group C. So what we're going to do, and I'll tell you what those movies are in just a second, but what we're going to do is we're going to discuss the four movies in Group A. We're going to give their merits and demerits and kind of just hash them around a little while, and that'll give us some good James Bond movie discussion in general, kind of comparing them. Oh, the other thing I did when I put them in the groups of four, I tried not to have the same Bond actor twice. Now, I think in the case of Roger Moore, I ended up with one group where he's in there twice just because he's in like, what, six or seven? I should know that off the top of my head. I think it's seven, right? And so
seven, Van.
Yes,
seven.
Well, it always throws me because Sean Connery did seven if you count the non-Eon one. Never Say Never Again. Okay. So anyway, there's one. But otherwise, I've got them spread out pretty well, I think. So we're going to do, in other words, I divided them in half, and you've got two groups of 12 seeded 1 through 12, 1 through 12. So we've got a group of 1, 6, 9, and 12 seeds, and 3, 4, 7, and 10 seeds. So I think that'll be for some nice, good, even competition. Group A, will be On Her Majesty's Secret Service, a number one seed. You Only Live Twice, a number six seed. Tomorrow Never Dies, a number nine seed. And A View to a Kill, which is a number 12 seed. In Group C, we have Dr. No, a number three seed. GoldenEye, a number four seed. Moonraker, a number seven seed. Yes, I was generous, but I was the one that made the seedings, so I got to make Moonraker a seven. The voting will determine if how right or wrong I was. And then Quantum of Solace is a number 10 seed. Now, here's how we're going to do it, gentlemen. As you know, we're going to debate them, and then when the time comes, we will assign 3-2. Well, do you want to do 3-2-1-0 or 4-3-2-1 points to each one?
I've got them written down as 3-2-1-0,
okay.
But I can easily add one. Well, my math skills are at that point.
Well, so
that works for me.
Believe me, there are some I'm happy to give a zero to. So
I like giving a zero to some.
Yeah, all right. So 3-2-1-0. So each of us, at the end of our debate of that group, will each score each one a 3-2-1-0. We'll add up the points, and that will be the ranking. Now, here's how it works. The top two movies from each group advance to the knockout round. The top, I'm trying to think, I think it's the top four out of the six groups. The top, the number three in four. Anyway, we have four wild cards. Leave it at that. It'll make sense as we go along. All right. Enough of that. People are not here.
I hope so.
People are not
on the show, and I don't know how it works.
The top two in each group advance.
I'm just messing with you.
All right.
Is there live scoring on the internet we can follow along? Or
I wish there was a way. I don't know, but I'll post it on the Bond group for sure, and maybe on Twitter too. But people didn't tune in to hear my explanation of how tournaments work. They tuned in to hear us talk about James Bond. So let's do that. What do you say?
I just like last time, I got confused. I thought we were going to talk about Gold Bond. I have a whole thing on medicated powders here. So give me a minute.
No. I thought I made it clear, man. Jeez Louise.
I'm going to try to have one of those jokes for every one of these things we do.
Great. Something to look forward to.
Look forward to that.
All right. I say we should start with Group C. I know that's strange, but I kind of want to save the big one for second. What do you think? Any objection to start with Group C?
That's fine.
All right. Group C is Dr. No, GoldenEye, Moonraker, and Quantum of Solace. Now, I think, let's see, this is our first episode. We haven't really worked a lot of this out in advance, so I figure we'll work it out on the fly and just decide over the course of this episode what works the best. So, should we go around the room and talk about each one overall, or should we talk about the entire group one at a time, or
How about this? And I'm just spitballing here.
Okay.
How about we throw it around the room, Van, you host, so you throw it to whoever you feel like taking turns or whatever. And we can at least, you know, very briefly say what, like, our high points are. You know,
yeah.
John can give us his high points of each one and his low points of each one. And we can kind of throw that around.
Good plan.
That could generate some discussion. And go from there.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay.
All right. So let's do them one movie at a time then, and then we can come back and kind of compare the group in the second go-around of it. So, all right. So for the first go-around, Dr. No, John. Overall high point and low point of Dr. No for you?
I mean, you're getting the classic, you're getting Connery, you know, you're getting the very old school Bond. I think it's a little, I mean, we've talked about this. I think compared to some of the other movies, early movies, it's a little slow. There's not actually a lot that happens sometimes. I mean, you do get the great bikini scene, which, you know, was spectacular, and the underneath the mango tree and all that stuff. And the tarantula that appears in James Bond's bed. But you know, it's, Not the best of the Connery movies, I think, even though it is definitely a classic. So,
okay. Jared, high points, low points? Dr. No.
Dr. No, I give it high points for pretty much what John said. For a nostalgia factor, like when you put in Dr. No and it's running, whether you're paying close attention to it or it's just running in the background of, you know, you're doing something else. It just has a what the French call an I don't know what about it that just, you know, it's just you see it and it just kind of captivates you. It almost takes you back to the, sort of like the first time you discovered, you know, Connery. So I give it credit for that. I give it credit for probably something that's bizarre that maybe a lot of people wouldn't give it credit for. Its use of color.
Yeah.
I think it uses color really well. Mm-hmm. I give it the same highs as John. I think John was spot on with his highs. I'll add Jack Lord. Pretty cool to see him in it.
Yep.
I really liked the guy who's, believe it or not, Van, it's escaping me. You can get me on this trivia. The guy who plays Coral.
I can't tell you all about him.
I know he was in the Army, and I know he ended up after World War II living in Italy. And yes. I just can't remember his name.
That's right. He did. Yeah, I remember that.
That's so amazing. I mean, like, I think and Ursula Andress, like, basically, the cast is spot on. The colors are great. It's got a great nostalgia factor. Pretty much the same minuses as John as well. It's slower. It's almost a plus and a minus in that it is one of the ones that is more tied to its book, which is kind of good if you like the book and kind of bad if you want more of that 007 as a superhero instead of 007 as a spy. So, yeah, pluses and minuses. What do you think, Van?
All right. Well, first and foremost, when I think about Dr. No, I think it's a much better movie than people remember. You think, oh, it's the first one, so it's not going to be as good or something, or that it was still kind of awkward, and there are awkward moments to it, but it is a full-on, full-fledged Bond film from the jump. It does not, I mean, maybe they get more complex and sophisticated with Goldfinger, or even with From Russia with Love, but Dr. No has a lot going right from the very beginning, and that always amazes me. It's got the great Ken Adam design. From the very beginning, you see that Ken Adam design that's going to be so consistent. And he just died last year, I believe. That's going to be consistent all the way through it. I can always rewatch that movie. It's one of just a handful of Bonds that I could put on any time and not be like, oh, that again. I mean, there's so much about it that makes me want to rewatch it. And it's got, finally, I mean, besides, it's got just classic moments. It's got the first time that Connery's got a cigarette. It's before they took the cigarettes out. So everybody's smoking cigarettes. Connery's got the cigarette dangling out of his lip, and he's like, you know, Sylvia Trench introduces herself, and then he's like, Bond, James Bond. In that classic, and the music's playing in the casino and everything, it just sets the stage so well for Bond. I love it. Now,
yes.
Another couple of classic moments I'm going to mention really quickly. It's got the great car chase scene where after the guys go down the in a flaming ball of fire down the mountain, and the construction worker comes out and is like, "What happened there?" or whatever, and Connery goes, "Oh, I believe they were late for a funeral." Which is I think he ad-libbed that. It was a classic moment, and then. And then the other scene that I just love in it is when he takes the Chinese woman, quote unquote, back to her house, and she's supposed to delay him. And just the way that Connery treats this lady, he's so brutal with her. He's so thuggish with her because he knows she's a bad guy, but he's playing along. And so he just treats her so horribly, and she has to put up with it because she's under orders to let him, you know, do whatever to stay there. And so he just gets to be as caddish as any moment in Bond history, and that's saying something. And she has to put up with it. It's hilarious. It is so funny. So did we lose somebody?
No, I'm here.
Jared, are you here? Uh-oh. I think we lost Jared. Oh, you back, Jared?
Yeah, I disappeared mysteriously there for a minute.
Ah, technology.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I got to hear you laugh about how Bond kind of treats that quasi-Asian woman.
That was it. That was pretty missing. Okay. The negatives. All right. I got a couple of negatives. One is that it did have a low budget. It only cost $1 million. Though I think they did a lot with it, right? The money, just about the million. It looks like there's more than $1 million on the screen, as they say. They get a lot out of their locations, right? Mm-hmm. And the other low point for me is the dragon tank, because at that point they had run out of money. The budget was dry. They took like an old Chevy and painted it like a dragon and put a flamethrower on it and like, oh, monster. It's terrible. That to me is the worst thing. That to me is the worst thing in the movie. So, all right. So we've kind of hashed around Dr. No. Let's see. Jared, lead us off with Goldeneye. Down, down, down.
You sound just like Tina Turner. That's amazing. Wow.
Boom, boom, boom.
Okay, well, you know, now that you mention it, highs and lows of GoldenEye. The highs, I really think that is an outstanding theme song. It's one of my favorites. Tina Turner really owned that one, and it really harkened back to the Shirley Bassey days, I thought. Mm-hmm. So anyway, great. To me, has one of the most fun and exciting opening scenes, pre-credit sequence.
Yes.
Which rolls into that awesome song, which rolls into Pierce Brosnan driving the DB5 really, really fast. And putting it in context, you have to remember we were, I think, 6 years out from our last Bond movie. And yeah. I know, like, guys like you and me and probably John, we were hungry for a Bond movie. And it was mm-hmm. It finally came. So this one is almost weird because, like, if we step back through the lens of time and we just look at it, As a Bond movie, I'm not sure how you guys will grade it. I give it really good marks. I love GoldenEye, but it's almost, for those of us who experienced it, it was almost like super super good because we were starving for a Bond movie. We got one and it was really good. The tank chase. Come on. That's awesome.
Yeah.
The tank chase was awesome. Pierce Brosnan finally got on the screen. We've been waiting for him for years.
Yes.
He was so good because, in just my opinion, I thought he was almost the perfect blend of Moore and Connery. I think he had a lot of Moore's charm, but mm-hmm. he still had a good violent edge to him. I just thought he was a good mixture, and he was a good Bond. Had a lot of good stunts, great action. Sean Bean was a great villain. I mean, I don't want to take up everybody else's high points, but those are just off the top of my head.
Yes.
I have one of the most bizarre sticking points with GoldenEye that maybe you'll ever hear. There's very little sticking points for it for me, by the way. I will tip my cards a little bit and let you guys know that personally, it's my second favorite Bond movie of all time.
Wow.
So the thing that I don't like about it, though, that bugs me every time I watch it, and this is extremely specific, is at the end when, spoiler alert, he kills Alec Trevelyan. He knocks him off that antenna. Well, technically, he doesn't die until the antenna falls on him. Double spoilers. But and then she comes along. She's got the gun to the helicopter pilot's head, and she makes him fly over so Bond can leap onto the helicopter. That is physically impossible because the antenna is dangling down. The helicopter cannot, because of its blade length, get close enough for Bond to jump onto it without crashing its blades into the very thing he's jumping off of. And it just bugs me every time. And that might be because I work in the, you know, helicopter industry in my day job. Really bugs me that there's no possible way that helicopter could have got close enough for James Bond to leap from the platform to the helicopter. Again, insanely specific, but it bothers me every time.
All right, that's good stuff. John, your highs and lows of GoldenEye.
So the fact that it was like a space-based, late, you know, super weapon didn't bother you, but helicopter blade length bothered you.
Are we implying that space-based EMP weapons are not possible and do not exist? Because they are, and they probably do.
Again, in 1986, that was a very specific thing. I mean, it was a very... a very, very timely thing. I enjoy this movie partially because of the Sean Bean character and how he you think he's a good guy and you think he's dead and then comes back. So I like that part. I mean, I was desperate for a James Bond movie, as Jared said, so I give it credit for that, but I don't love it nearly as much as Jared did. There's some other stuff in it that I don't love so much. So, but it's still entertaining. I mean, it's got a lot of good chase scenes, like you said, you know, helicopters and tanks and everything else. And it's got some good villains in it. So I appreciate it.
Well, it's one of my favorites too. And I'm on record as saying that while Sean Connery is the best Bond, my favorite personal favorite Bond, of course, is Pierce Brosnan. He was my Bond. You know, he was the one that I was wanting in the 80s and he couldn't get out of Remington Steele. And so they went and got my least favorite Bond for a couple of movies. Now, that leads me into the thing I like about it, which is that – take a deep breath, Jared. And that's going to be happening a lot, guys. Y'all might as well just get used to it, all right? We're going to be disagreeing on stuff. But here's my problem.
I put up with John's whole not-so-great GoldenEye talk, but when we talking about Dalton, man, I get upset.
Yeah, I got no use for Dalton. But see, here's the thing. The two Dalton movies really came across as 1980s TV budget made for TV movies.
Wait, are we talking about a Dalton movie?
I'm trying to draw a comparison. I'm talking.
Van has the floor.
You wouldn't know. All right, so the two Dalton movies came across as sort of TV level, made for TV movie action movies of the 80s. Then we go 6 years, okay, with no Bond. 1995, we get GoldenEye, and GoldenEye looked way bigger budget. It looked slicker. It had better effects. It just seemed like better camera work. The color was richer. Everything about GoldenEye seemed like a quantum leap forward from where they were when they left off before it. Now, I love Pierce Brosnan. He thought he was finished. This is the thing. This is without a doubt the best Brosnan Bond. A lot of actors, their first one is their best. Daniel Craig, but. It's not my favorite. We'll talk about that later, but it is probably the best Brosnan. And that opening is amazing. The dive off the dam and then everything that happens after it. I love Xenia on a top. She's one of my favorite Bond girls. And I love Sean Bean. And I love that he's a 006. We actually get another 00 through the whole movie. You know, I mean, we've had him in the cameo or like in Octopussy or in Thunderball, we'll see him for 2 seconds. But we actually have another 00 agent all the way through this movie. It's so cool. So I really like that about it. Now, the only thing I really have to say negative about it is that there's never, after that opening, there's never a classic Bond moment like Brosnan would get later. I mean, the tank chase is pretty cool. But I just, off the top of my head, I just can't think of other great moments in GoldenEye that compare to the set piece things that like Roger Moore or Sean Connery would do, right? Just those big, long set piece things, you know, involving skiing or a train or something like that. It's much more about running around doing things, running. So I love it, but it's not quite in my top three or four, I don't guess. It's very close, so... That's the things that I like and don't like about it. All right, so there's GoldenEye. So now we get to, this would be very interesting. I guess I'll go first this time because I haven't gone first yet. Just like the moon, Reka knows. Ah, Moonraker.
If you sing the whole song, Jared and I will both give it a 3.
And our listeners will give us a 0. But anyway, Moonraker is a movie that when I saw it in the theater in 79, and I think all of our listeners by this point know all the story behind it about Star Wars and everything. But when I saw Moonraker in the theater in 79, I was fairly disappointed because... You know, you go and see Star Wars, and then you go and see Moonraker, and, you know, you go see Alien, and then you see Moonraker or whatever, And Moonraker is just, it has a lot of silliness in it. I think that a lot of what people perceive as the silliness of Moonraker, which is to me not any sillier than most of the Roger Moore movies, and in some cases less. I would say that Sheriff Pepper is way sillier all the way through two Bond movies than he is through Moonraker. But the things I like about Moonraker, I love the different locations. It's got great locations. It's got Venice. It's got Rio. It's got California. It's got orbit, low Earth orbit, with the shuttles. I love the Moonraker shuttles. I love. I think that everything they do in outer space in that movie is fairly plausible. I mean, some of it's kind of super Bond, you know, whatever, but it's still fairly plausible. I love Drax. I love that he's the Perry Como of Bond villains. He's so mellow, he almost falls asleep in the middle of his own scenes, but that's okay. The things I don't like about it, and again, I love all the stuff in Venice is so cool. Even the double-taking parrot. Everybody, you know what? Everybody forgets the dog. You know, the dog wants some attention, too. He looks at the hovercraft gondola, too, and everybody pays attention to the pigeon and ignores the dang dog, so that's not fair. Now, things I don't like about it, Jaws. I like Jaws as a villain, and for the first half of Moonraker, that he's in, the first half of his appearances in it, like in that parade, Jaws is pretty freaking scary, like he was in the previous movie. But then they turn him into a clown, literally. Right? This is what's here's the irony. He's dressed like a clown in the scene where he's scary, and in all the rest of his scenes, he just is a clown. How's that for some irony? Right? Like the moment where he rips the steering wheel off the boat. That's one of the best boat chases. I love that boat chase. And then we get Jaws ripping the steering wheel off the boat and going, oops, and going over the falls, right? Or when the cable car, you got that great cable car scene, right? You got a great cable car scene on Sugarloaf Mountain, and then you get Jaws buried under rubble at the end. I wish that in the 70s with Roger Moore, I wish that the director and the writers and everything had just reeled it in a little bit. They never did that to Sean Connery. They're never doing it to Daniel Craig. They certainly didn't do it to Pierce Brosnan. And yet, for some reason, with Roger Moore, they just said, hey, let's get goofy. And some of it's charming, but it just, those are the moments that really kind of bug me. John, Moonraker.
I think you hit it. I think it's too silly at times. I do. I mean, there are some scenes in that movie I just love. I love that boat chase scene.
Yeah.
I think it's great. And I like some of the other scenes a lot. But it does get silly with the Jaws stuff and some of the other stuff towards the end. I think it's, you know, one of the better Roger Moore ones, because of those things, because of the really good parts. So, mm-hmm. I like it a lot. I like the music and I like, I like the movie.
I want to ask both of you this. Okay. So John, you take this first and then we'll ask Jared. The outer space stuff gets a lot of criticism. I think it's just one more location. It's not like he's going to Alderaan, okay, or the Death Star. He's in low.
He just goes in a near Earth orbit.
So. Right, right. Which, you know, you can do. It's actually possible. And the spaceships they use are actual space shuttles that we have. Does the outer space stuff seem utterly ridiculous for you, or is it all right?
No, I mean, and I it's not ridiculous, and I get it, but. It wasn't great, though.
Okay. Jared, give us the highs and lows, but first, follow up on that while we're talking about it. What do you think about the outer space stuff in Moonraker?
I've actually never seen Moonraker.
Oh, stop it.
No, I'm just kidding. I just watched Moonraker last week or 2 weeks ago.
Me too.
And I think I was, like, live tweeting you because that's what I do to you, Van,
yes.
Whether you want to read them or not.
That was funny. he's tweeting me all the way through Moonraker. I just watched it, and I'm like, oh, I get to watch it again through Jared. Yay.
Yay. The outer space stuff, I will actually give credit where it's due. I think it's done well. Like, I remember when I was watching it a couple of weeks ago, like, specifically when they first get to the station, and that one guy kind of goes floating into zero gravity. gravity to turn the the whole station on and turn on the gravity and whatnot. It just looked really good. I was like, you know, for 1970s, that's pretty good zero G effects.
Yeah.
You know, so I give it its props for looking good. For the whole space thing looked fine. I'm not big on it because, like you already said, it just felt like we're rushing this one because we want to get Bond in space because Star Wars is popular, and I feel like the movie suffered for that. I would have loved to seen that movie released a few years later where they could put more time and thought into it.
Okay, because it is kind of a remake of a couple others. Yeah, John and I talked about that pretty much at length. That it's kind of a remake of The Spy Who Loved Me and You Only Live Twice. So.
I can definitely see that.
So, go ahead and give us your highs and lows otherwise.
Moonraker, my old friend. let's start with the highs. It's got a pretty good pre-credit sequence, to be honest with
you. It does, yes.
That's the skydiving one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I always thought that was kind of neat. And that's, to me... That's to me where they really set up what unfortunately would become the Jaws gag, where he just has this terrible, terrible luck, but yet amazing luck. Yeah. Like bad things happen to him, but he always walks away.
But he walks
away,
which
becomes
right.
You know, pretty funny. He's, actually, I'll admit I laughed at it.
He's
but
the,
I also
he's the coyote. He's the coyote.
He's Wile E. Coyote.
And Bugs Bunny. Exactly Bond is Roadrunner.
But I do agree with you that it he can be very cool and menacing, but that diminishes that.
Yeah.
I agree with you in that. But anyway, good stuff about it. Yeah, I think Moore's portrayal is actually one of his better ones. I think he was kind of on the top of his game between this one and For Your Eyes Only. I think were his two best, but we'll get into that later. Just as his portrayal goes. But there was this... So that was good. I like the opening sequence. Okay, let's go to the bad. I got a lot to talk about here.
All right, bring it on.
I'm not a fan of Moonraker. I make no bones about Moonraker being in contention for my least favorite Bond, but I always quantify that by saying even my least favorite Bond movie is better than 90% of the movies I've seen.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. We're within a universe here. So everybody out there who's big Moonraker people who is typing angry letters into the show, calm down. It's okay. I still love Moonraker, but I'm not big on the theme song. It's my least favorite theme song.
Wow.
I just don't find it to be particularly memorable. I like Shirley Bassey, but this one didn't do it for me. So not big on the theme song. Not big on the villain. Like I said, Drax is just kind of like a boring guy, you know. Especially, it's interesting that we just contrast this with GoldenEye, where they had a villain that was like as good as Bond, like they could have an actual fist fight.
Yeah,
right. If Bond fist fights Drax, that's, you know, it's like beating up a child.
Yeah, it would be kind of sad. It would.
So like Drax doesn't grab me as a villain very well. And then the movie itself, I think what gets to me the most is it feels really imbalanced to me. And you alluded to this, like you've got the really scary carnival scene with Jaws coming down that alleyway, man. That terrified me as a kid.
Yeah.
You've got that scene where Drax releases the dogs and they basically go eat that girl in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Terrifying. You know,
that is a very scary scene for James.
It is. And especially because, you know, I'm watching this. I know I'm a little younger than Van, and I think you guys are about the same age. So I think I'm the young one here. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching Moonraker when it come out,
79.
Okay, yeah. So I was 3. So I didn't see Moonraker until probably I was about 6. And so those things really terrified me.
Yeah.
And then you go back and you watch it as an adult, and they're still fairly terrifying. And then you've got, then it just all of a sudden it's like so campy and goofy with a double taking pigeon and a floating gondola car, and it just feels imbalanced. There's a lot of good in it. Like I said before, worst Bond movies are still great movies. There's a lot of good in it, but it just feels so weirdly imbalanced. And I just go back to that whole thing where I just feel like it was rushed. I mean, like we said, you go back to the previous movie, Spy Who Loved Me. They tell you on the end credits, the next one's for your eyes only. Star Wars hits, so we got to get Bond in space. And it just, I feel like they just kind of rushed it.
Yeah.
I feel like if they'd waited a few years, it could have been a lot better, maybe a little bit more balanced. Again, I hope I didn't hurt anyone's Moonraker feelings, but I like it. It's not like I won't watch Moonraker, but it's just, it has a lot of weird balance issues to me.
John, did we get your take on Moonraker? I don't remember.
Yeah.
We did. Okay, that's right. All right. Last one in this group is Quantum of Solace, the sophomore and perhaps sophomoric effort from Daniel Craig. This one, 2008. Let's see. So let's start back around with John. Good and bad of Quantum of Solace.
Well...
Yes.
It was a gigantic step down from Casino Royale.
Yeah.
And you know, really not a great movie. I did not like the villain at all, the environmental guy.
Mr. Green.
Mr. Green, you know, he was kind of blah, not threatening, not scary. You had the, you know, the Bond girl who was trying to get back at the South American general guy.
Yes.
And you had Bond go back and, you know, team up with his friend from the first movie who he, you know, caused to be tortured. and he's like, oh, sure, I'll fly to South America and help you out. And then he dies, yeah. and Bond robs him and throws him in a dumpster.
Dumpster. Oh my gosh! I know. Yes, he wouldn't have minded. I think he probably would have, honestly. But okay.
Yeah, maybe. So, but you know, the whole plot was about water and that kind of stuff. So I get that. But there was a cool scene at the opera, mm-hmm. And that was pretty good. But mm-hmm. overall, you know. And there was a scene where he's flying a bad plane and getting chased by a little fighter or whatever. But not a great movie, not a lot of, you know, high points in terms of chases and really fun scenes and stuff. And the villains, you know, really dragged it down, I think. And honestly, in the plot, the kind of the writing of it. So that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Jared, what do you think?
I think this is good news for Moonraker because this might be the movie that I like less than Moonraker. So let me start off with what's good, and this will probably be very brief. The best thing that came out of Quantum of Solace was the Quantum of Solace video game by Activision. It's a hell of a lot more fun than the actual movie. I enjoyed playing the game immensely. The movie... I remember being very excited to go see it because, you know, Daniel Craig was back. And I mean, Daniel Craig does a fine performance. His Bond is fine. The story is just forgettable, extremely forgettable. This is the only Bond movie, and we alluded to this on the last Bond podcast. We were talking about gadgets. We're like, what gadgets make us mad? If you remember that. Yeah. This is the only Bond movie that makes me mad. It doesn't have anything to do with gadgets, but it just... It makes me mad because my biggest low note for this movie is how they filmed the action scenes, which was crappy. Just plain up crappy. Because they tried to do what was popular in the Bourne movies with that whole shaky cam, oh, we're going to make you feel like you're in the fight. No, mm-hmm. I don't want to feel like I'm in the fight. I want to feel like I'm at a movie watching a well-filmed fight scene. Mm-hmm. It was confusing. It was shaky. I mean, there's the scene where he's chasing people around on boats, and then there's like a hook and a chain, and next thing you know, a boat's flipped over. I've rewatched that about four times, and I still don't know what happened. the scene at the beginning where he's like chasing the guy, and they end up dangling from ropes, and they're like fighting, and they're like the gun, you know, boom, shoots the gun, and I'm like, is James Bond dead? Is the guy dead? I don't know. I don't know who anybody
they
is.
They look the same.
Where anyone is in space and time.
Yeah, they. If you're going to have two guys fighting and you can't see their faces, you need to have them in different color clothing.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, James Bond wasn't dead. But my point is, every action scene was so confusing because they were like, oh, let's do that Bourne thing that's so popular right now. And that's what darn right ticks me off. James Bond movies don't copy other movie style. You set the trend. You don't follow the trend.
Amen.
And it really suffered for that. Just any action scene in that movie, I'm just like, I don't know. Apparently, you got to be 14 years old and, you know, high on Mountain Dew to follow what the hell's going on. Because I just don't get it. So, yeah, I got a little fired up there. I just – the action scenes are just awful. I don't like shaky cam. I come to tolerate it in my Bourne movies because I know that's kind of what they do. But I still don't like it.
Right.
So, anyway, that's my biggest problems with for me. Story is utterly forgettable, mm-hmm. and the action scenes are terribly, terribly filmed. In the plus column, I thought the actress was pretty good. The lead female, I thought she was pretty good. You know, Craig, he looks dreamy. That's all he needs to do. You know what's weird though? I did make a note while you were talking. Like I think you guys didn't like the whole Mathis in the dumpster the dumpster thing. I actually really liked that. I know that's a dark thing to say. I'll explain. I thought I always liked the times in the Bond movies where they show us the not so glamorous side of the whole espionage thing. And when I see that scene and Bond basically kind of has to do that and move on with almost no emotion, it's one of those things that almost makes your heart break for him. Like, this is the world he lives in. And it kind of puts me in mind, and I know we'll get to this movie eventually, but, like, not a lot to love about Die Another Day, but that opening scene where it shows you the downside of espionage where he gets tortured
That.
I like that kind of stuff. I like, this is, you know, we watch James Bond get all these women and have cool gadgets and fly off on a freaking hang glider, but you know what? Here's the downside. And so I appreciated that part of the movie. I was like, okay, you gave us that dash of reality that makes Bond more human. Makes my heart break a little bit for him. So that I actually kind of liked. But yeah, as far as just their action movies, film them better.
Here's the thing about Quantum of Solace. There's three things about Quantum of Solace that I like. The opening car chase is possibly my favorite car chase in the entire Bond series. I love that opening car chase. I know it's shaky cam and all that, but I really like it because it's so violent. It's just an utterly hardcore, violent, you know, crazy car chase. I love Mr. White. I was so happy he came back in Spectre because I love crazy Mr. White going, "We're everywhere." I just love that. And then the opera house scene, John mentioned that too. John and I both are big fans of when the opera house scene is what I wanted Spectre to be from start to finish. And they basically just try to go back and recreate the opera house scene inside that boardroom building. And it was okay, but it never had the same, I don't know, it didn't work for me as well as it did when it was Quantum in the opera house. So I really love the opera house scene because it's Bond outsmarting like an entire stadium full of bad guys almost. On the bad side is pretty much everything else because, you know, you mentioned, Jared, that Moonraker felt rushed to me. This one is the one that feels rushed to me. This was a Bond movie that came out 2 years after the previous, and they don't do them that quickly anymore. They've gone 3 or more years. In fact, Spectre came out in 2015. So unless we're getting a Bond movie made and put out in the next year or so, year and a half, it's going to be longer than 3 years before we get Bond 25. Whereas this came out barely 2 years after Casino Royale, and it really felt rushed to me. So God knows that's enough about Quantum of Solace. Let's go ahead and score them, gentlemen. Let's see. How we want to do this? Let's give. Let's each go what our points are down the top to bottom. So, John, who gets your 3?
Dr. No.
Dr. No has a 3. All right. Who gets your 2?
Goldeneye.
All right. Who gets your 1? Oh. Tough competition. Moonraker gets a 1. Woo! I'm hoping that Moonraker can get just enough points to sneak in as a wild card. and so Quantum of Solace gets a big 0. Wow.
I couldn't wait to give Quantum of Solace a 0.
Right, right. All right. You know, this is a tough group for me. I'm going to have a hard time. Jared, who gets your three?
All right. I've decided to do my points in my Sean Connery voice. my high score for the 3 points goes to GoldenEye.
GoldenEye's three. All right. It's in the lead. Who gets your two?
Number two goes to Dr. No.
Okay. All right, who gets your one?
It's going to make you very happy, Van. It's Moonraker.
You know, it's funny that we were on our show previously, John and I just established that Moonraker is my second favorite theme song.
I did listen to that, and I was just aghast. And but that's all right. I mean, people can like what they like. It's all right. I mean,
and Quantum gets a zero. Quantum gets a zero. Quantum has yet to...
Actually, I gave Quantum of Solace a sad face. It's not just a zero. It has two dots.
He gave it an emoji.
Down smile.
He gave it an emoji. I like that. All right.
But if we're talking video game, I might give it more. But anyway.
This is really tough for me because I love all three of the top three. So I'm going to go ahead and give Quantum of Solace my zero. Just to get that out of the way, all right?
Oh, man.
Now, I want to give like a point and a half to each one of them, if that makes any sense at all, but it doesn't. I'm going to have to give my three to GoldenEye.
Whoop, whoop.
My two to Moonraker. And my one to Dr. No. But it's a strong one. That is not a weak one by any means. So that means that GoldenEye wins the group in a huge upset over Dr. No. 8-6. Dr. No finishes second. Moonraker ends up with 4 points, which could be enough to see it through to the next round. And Quantum of Solace, lovely parting gifts. Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. All right. Group A, and let's roll things along here with some alacrity, particularly when we get down to number 12 there. Jared, start us off with good and bad. As I know that there's so much to say about this movie, but we got to be concise. On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
I feel like I'm being rushed here.
You are. I'm sorry, but we got to roll along here. This isn't a two-hour show.
All right, fine. On Her Majesty's Secret Service, good. It's one of the most important, if not the most important, James Bond movie in the franchise.
Fair.
As far as establishing character and character development. James Bond is a character that doesn't need a lot of development, but this one I thought did it perfectly. Lazenby is extremely underrated.
Yes.
The battle scene at the Snowtop, whatever the hell it was, clinic. At
His
the end,
Gloria.
Standing. I like Diana Rigg was excellent. The dude that played her father was awesome. It's very underrated.
Absolutely.
Downsides. It's a little too long. It's kind of a long movie. You got to invest the time in it.
It is long.
I'm not coming up with a lot of other downsides. I don't have a lot more negative to say about it off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let somebody else take it since I'm being pressured for time here. You know?
Well, think about it as we continue on. We can throw in a couple more comments. John, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, good and bad.
I mean, the most, to me, maybe the single most emotional moment in any of the Bond films.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. So that's got to be number one for me in terms of good. Lazenby was, you know, he's not the best, but he did the job. But I think this one has, you know, you got Spectre, you got the plot, you got what happens at the end. So it's still a really good movie, but
I've come to appreciate this movie much more over the years, obviously, as you get deeper into Bond fandom and you realize just how highly it's regarded by the Bond sort of base, you know. So I'll just say the good things for me, I do like Lazenby a lot. I wish he could have done more than one. I love Diana Rigg, though not as much as some people do, but she's very, very good. And I love that that he has another helper. I always like the Bond helpers. I love Tiger Tanaka. I love in Turkey. Oh crap,
Karen Bay.
Karen Bay, yeah, I love Karen Bay, and I love Tracy's father, Draco, whatever. In this one, there are so many really good moments in it. John and I really hashed through them pretty good in our earlier episode talking about this one, but. I guess the negative, I agree, it does kind of run long, but that's good in a way because you want it to keep going. You know, it really was filmed the novel, so it does things that it doesn't fit into continuity with any of the other movies until they sort of retroactively make it later. It's amazing that it's less silly than Roger Moore's Bonds in a way because, you know, when you have those women up in the Piz Gloria with Telly Savalas, that has some goofy potential, and they never really get goofy with it. Other than that one lady that's afraid of chicken. I mean, other than that, you know, it plays it pretty straight. So I really love this movie, and I've come to appreciate it a lot more. The more you learn about it, you know, how the color was used in it, how it was filmed and everything. Peter Hunt, I believe, right? I mean, everything about it, just an absolute classic. Okay, now we go to another one that to some is quite a classic, but it's got a few moments. Let's see, Jared. Let's see. Did we talk? Yeah, go ahead, Jared. You tell us what you think about "You Only Live Twice."
Oh goodness, "You Only Live Twice." All right, high points. I'm gonna steal yours, Van. I already know what you're thinking. It's got the best villain lair. That volcano lair is really cool.
I do. It is the best lair. I give it that. Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta give it that. Tiger Tanaka's awesome.
Yes.
It's definitely one of my favorite Connerys. It's because it's a lot of fun. Still has a bit of Connery hard edge. Got a great locale. I love Little Nelly. It's one of my favorite vehicles. Definitely high points there. Low points, I'm hard-pressed to find any. I really like You Only Live Twice. I'm kind of coming up empty on low points. I'll let somebody else take it, and I'll jump in as necessary if something occurs to me. But yeah, run with it, John or Van.
John, you only live twice.
Ninjas, volcano,
yes.
Cool helicopter, Ernst Drivo Blofeld.
Boom! There it is.
Those answers are all correct.
James Bond and ninjas. I'm in.
Yes.
Like, soul. Make it tomorrow.
That's right. Any low points for you on You Only Live Twice?
I think Jared covered the low point stuff. So.
Okay.
Which I did not.
Which you did not. I mean,
Wow. The voting's going to be interesting in this group.
Makes a goofy-looking Asian guy.
Yeah, that's there you go. That's a low point, yeah. All right, besides that one.
But he's still dreamy.
Well, besides that one, I'll say a couple of things. This is my favorite James Bond movie, okay? So I should just say that up front. This is my number one for all the reasons that have already been stated. It's got two great Bond girls. I love Aki and I love Kissy. And I'm so sad when Aki dies. It's got my favorite Blofeld. It's got my favorite lair. It's got ninjas. It's got a rocket ship that swallows other rocket ships. It's so 1960s. It's just so much cool stuff. It's got the car that is picked up by the magnet and dropped in the ocean. That's a good way to get rid of the bad guys. It's got so many cool things in it. Here's the downside to it. The plot makes no sense at all. The plot—it's an utterly nonsensical story that's so cool that you don't care.
Shut up, Van.
Hey, it's my favorite one. I can say that. Come on.
Wait! I just thought of the worst thing about You Only Live Twice.
Yeah.
I just thought of it.
Yeah.
I've got the ultimate downside to it. Okay. Yep. And it's because of Blu-ray. This is the only movie where you. On Blu-ray, because of the high definition, when he goes to the bathhouse with Tiger Tanaka, James Bond's junk is clear as day.
Floating around that wall. Oh, great. Well,
and as much as I love Bond and I think he's great, I want that part to just be, you know, just for your eyes only. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, absolutely. That's not a reason for me to go buy the Blu-ray.
007's junk floating around in the bathtub water is the downside.
Okay. Well, now we know. That and the plot making no sense, but still we love it anyway because it's so
one awesome. Of those disturbs me more than the other.
All right. So that's You Only Live Twice. That did better than I thought it was going to do. Now we go to Tomorrow Never Dies, the second Pierce Brosnan film. I guess it's my turn to lead off again, so I'll do that. So as much as GoldenEye is a really, really great movie and a return for Bond after a long absence, the longest single absence, I guess, in the series so far, I love Tomorrow Never Dies because we get everything with Brosnan that we got in GoldenEye, and I like the Bond girl, the main one, even better because I'm a huge Michelle Yeoh fan. I love when Bond has helpers, right? I love Felix Leiter. I love the guys we just mentioned. And Michelle Yeoh is another great Bond helper. She's the Chinese version of James Bond, and she's a woman. She's Michelle Yeoh, duh. She's fantastic. And I wanted a Tiger Tanaka movie, and I want a Wei Lin movie. I don't like the villain, and I'm particularly sad when I realized that it was supposed to be Anthony Hopkins, because my gosh, Anthony Hopkins would have made a great Bond villain. And little what's his name of the Sparrows from Yeah. He's just never scary. He's like a little kid throwing a tantrum, and he's never, never scary. Another thing I love about this movie is Doctor what's his name, the big assassin guy. Stamper's an idiot, but his mentor, the doctor, oh, I love him. He's like, it's nothing personal, you understand. I'm just doing my job, you know. And he's so funny.
I could shoot you from Stuttgart.
From Stuttgart, yes, yes. And I also, while I don't dislike Terry Hatcher, I love the fact that she's in like 20 minutes of the movie and they kill her off and bring in Wei Lin, and Wei Lin becomes the romantic interest. And that's because Terry Hatcher was pregnant. And they couldn't use her anymore, so they had to rewrite the script so she couldn't be in it anymore. I'm like, yay, way to get pregnant, Terry Hatcher, so we only have a few minutes of you, and we get more Wei Lin. So that totally worked for me. You know, and somebody made this point, it's my last thing, somebody made a really good point that they should have called Terry Hatcher's character, what's her name from the first two? Sylvia Trench. She should have been Sylvia Trench. Absolutely should have been Sylvia Trench. That would have totally made sense. Jared, Tomorrow Never Dies.
Tomorrow Never Dies. I don't want to break your heart, man, but I'm not a big fan. To me, I guess I almost had the opposite experience as you did. Coming off of GoldenEye, I was on such a high, and then, you know, Tomorrow Never Dies came out, and at this point, I'm working at the movie theater, so I have, you know, I see the trailer as soon as it comes in the mail. I played it and watched it, and I was very amped for it. And then the movie just kind of, I don't know, it fell a little flat for me. I still like it. I still think it's a good movie and a fun movie, but just kind of unremarkable. And I think it does come back to what you said about the villain. I thought the villain was just kind of boring. I have this weird thing about Tomorrow Never Dies, it kind of bugs me. The other henchman, Gupta, I think is his name?
Yeah, yeah. The weapons dealer guy.
That dude, he is the Swiss Army knife of henchmen. You will never be able to unsee this now. Go back and watch it. And watch Gupta take care of buying and selling at a weapons bazaar.
Right.
And then watch him work the security cameras at the party. And then watch him go, oh, I can enhance and clean up that audio. And then watch him reprogram the satellite. And then watch he does everything.
He does.
Like
you don't make henchmen like that anymore.
Elliot Carver's entire empire was on Gupta's shoulders. Yeah, and does everything.
And the amazing thing is, he wasn't Indian. He was Gupta, and he was some white guy.
Yeah, some white guy.
It was amazing.
I liked in the plus column though, and there's a lot of pluses for this movie. I liked the pre-credit sequence was good.
Yeah.
The Sheryl Crow song was decent. The motorcycle helicopter chase was kind of fun. Other than that, I don't know. It just feels like one of the more generic Bonds to me. It doesn't stick with me a whole lot. I like it. I don't love it.
I do like the opening weapons bazaar scene where Bond steals the jet. That's a good point. I'd forgotten about that.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
It's a good scene.
Yeah. All right, John. Tomorrow Never Dies.
I don't love it. A lot of it has to do with Jonathan Pryce, but also kind of the plot. Like, he's, you know, he's going to start a war to make money as the news media. You know, that's his big plan.
He's the original fake news guy.
He's the original fake news guy. He's going to control information and make. But he's not even going to make fake. Well, I guess he does make fake news to lure the two sides into fighting each other. With it, but he does not even fake news because he actually destroys their ships with his little stealth ship.
Yeah, I love the stealth ship.
I do like the Chinese agent. I think she's spectacular, and I think the parts with her and Bond together are good. And like you were saying, the helicopter chasing them on the through the market on the motorcycle is really good. But I think a lot of our problems have to do with if it was Anthony Hopkins, I'd love this movie a lot more because Jonathan Pryce is,
That makes me think. Jonathan Pryce delivers every single line in this movie with the same. And then I said this, like he, everything he says is like he's announcing something for his network. You know, like it's like he gets up in the morning and tells the cook, "I would like waffles for breakfast." You know, everything, I can't quite get it. You know what I'm saying though, right? I can't quite duplicate it, but you know, everything every menacing line of dialogue he utters to Bond or to whoever, or to his wife, always sounds like this smug little promo for his TV show or something. It just drives me up the wall. Anthony Hopkins would not have done that.
I also like the when he does like the very borderline, maybe even crossing the border, racist moment of making fun of Wei Lin's kung fu.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
I'm like, this is so ridiculous.
He does it and he goes, "Pathetic." See, that's the same thing, right? There it is. "Pathetic. You will be on my network 24 hours a day."
You know why that moment doesn't work? Because he goes, "Pathetic." And you're thinking in the back of your mind, yeah, I'd like to see you last 30 seconds in the ring with Wei Lin.
Without Stamper standing there, right, yeah.
15 seconds.
No kidding. Oh, we should kill him. All right, we come now to last and pretty much least, the 12 seed on this side of the brackets. A View to a Kill from 1985 with Roger Moore. Let's see. I'm gonna let John lead us off. He might have something good to say about it. You don't want me to start on this one. Go ahead, John.
Christopher Walken, Duran Duran music theme. Ugh. There's a scene where they attack one of the main characters with a blimp.
Yeah. We talked about that before. Oh my god. Yes. Okay, go ahead. Oh my god. The blimp.
I had to tell you about. I watched this movie with my kids, and they're like, they couldn't get away. What's going on?
I love it.
The other part about this movie I love is there's a big plot element that hinges on California state bureaucracy.
Yeah. So,
and like California state bureaucracy records management.
That's it. So yeah. It's up there with Phantom Menace in that way, right?
That's right. So that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, Jared.
All right, let me explain to you why this is the greatest Bond movie ever made.
Oh, God, no. No, no, no.
All right. For I'm going to narrow it down to three reasons. Number one, Christopher Walken. Number two, Christopher Walken. And number three, Academy Award-winning actor Christopher Walken. There's not a whole lot else like about this movie,
no.
And I fully recognize that. Ugh. Although, yes, it has the most successful theme song,
yeah.
And it is really good. The James Bond introducing the world to snowboarding was kind of cool because that was new at the time. Wish they hadn't played the goofy music with it.
It's Roger Moore. They have to play a goofy sound effect.
Yeah, I understand. Roger Moore was past his prime. He really didn't need to do another movie.
No. 58.
Mayday was an interesting character, but it's just a weird romantic connection.
Yeah, something.
It's just something weird about it. But yeah, Dolph Lundgren guest appearance. But I give this movie a lot of credit because you're not going to find a bigger Christopher Walken fan than me. So He carried me through the movie.
I've got one good thing to say about it and one bad thing.
Christopher Walken?
No. I love Tibbetts.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Tibbetts is awesome.
They're like Sherlock Holmes and Watson when they go to the big estate, the big manor house. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe I forgot to mention Tibbetts. He is really cool.
I like all that stuff. That's pretty neat. But, yeah, as John was mentioning, and he and I have laughed about this before, the blimp, if it was like some kind of Hindenburg or something, but it's like it has all the intimidation of one of those things that drops Chick-fil-A coupons inside a basketball arena. I'm waiting for Christopher Walken to start dropping little cows on parachutes out of that thing. It's just not, Zorin's blimp is just not, it's nothing. So I do appreciate a good Christopher Walken performance, and they're all good, but it's kind of like, it's up there with Christopher Lee and The Man with the Golden Gun. There's the great villain, and then there's the movie he's in, right, which we'll talk about. So that's what I have to say about A View to a Kill, and I'm not a Duran Duran big fan, and that's like my least favorite of all their songs. So even though it does have a Duran Duran theme song, that doesn't do anything for me either. And of course, Tanya Roberts is just no prize in this movie either. So there's not a lot to hang your hat on, you know, in terms of goodness in this movie. He breathes out of a tire, doesn't he? You got that, I guess.
He does.
Okay, there you go. So we, John and I, determined in our show, in our previous show, that if they had the green caps, Bond would have been defeated by nitrogen in the tires. All right, let's rate them, gentlemen. Any last thoughts on those four that we haven't mentioned before we rate them? Because we kind of went through quicker.
No, the only other thought I didn't mention was on Her Majesty's Secret Service. What John and I think we all pointed to at the end was the most poignant film, but I also feel like that was its most negative thing, is that it ended on such a down note.
It was a downer. They've never done that since, either.
It was like a down note. Everyone's eyes are teared up, and then it's like, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-da.
Yeah, that is kind of, that is odd. I agree. That is odd.
Transition, you know, wasn't there.
You know,
that's the only note I had written down that I forgot to mention. Anyway, score him.
If it ended like every other Bond movie of the 60s and 70s, then he would have driven away with her, and then, like, they'd have landed on a raft and floated off into the ocean together, right? It's totally the opposite of the ending of every other Bond movie from that era. It had to have just been a huge shock to the viewers back then. Imagine that. Imagine seeing it for the first time in the theater in 69, and before that you've had Sean Connery on a raft, or, you know, getting picked up by the airplane, or, you know, all the various ways he would close them out, and then you've got that. Wow.
Yeah.
That must have been shocking to viewers.
I would like to go back, like, and just see the people's faces as they're leaving the theater.
Yeah, because you go to a Bond movie thinking it's going to have some, you know, some really funny, wacky ending where he has the hot babe in the bikini in the boat or something, and instead you get a bullet in the head. Man, that just must have been something. Right. All right, let's see. So, let's see. This time I guess we'll let Jared give his numbers. So, who gets the three, Jared?
All right, I'm giving the three to You Only Live Twice.
I like it. I like it. Who gets the two?
Two slot. On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
All right. Who gets the one? As if I didn't.
Christopher Walken.
Oh, wow. Tomorrow Never Dies gets a point. Zero. Wow. These groups are harsh, man. It's just how it goes when they're stacked up against each other.
It's cutthroat.
It is. All right, John, who gets the three for you?
You Only Live Twice.
Wow. I think it's going to advance. It's going to survive and advance. Who gets your two?
On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Wow. Okay. Who gets your one?
View to a Kill.
No, seriously?
I love you, John.
You guys suck, man.
You do.
You're going to leave Tomorrow Never Dies at zero. Wow. All right. Wow. I'm hurt. All right.
Taking it personally.
Y'all did exactly the same on all four. I'm gonna. I see. I would vote strategically, but I want to. I got to vote honestly. I'm not gonna try to like manipulate, you know, the scores. So I've got to give my 3 to You Only Live Twice because it's my favorite Bond. And dang, you know, I've got to give On Her Majesty's Secret Service my 2. I don't want to see Tomorrow Never Dies crap out. But of course, it's way, way, way. If I were giving 10, 9, 8, and 0, it would be instead of 3, 2, 1, and 0, it would work out. So Tomorrow Never Dies gets my 1. View to a Kill gets a negative 730. Negative.
It gets your sad face. It scored Quantum of Solace.
It gets my finger. Here's the thing about this group. A View to a Kill did not finish in last place in this group, and that blows my mind. Wow.
Christopher Walken's power cannot be stopped.
58-year-old Roger Moore beats Pierce Brosnan. That's unbelievable. All right, so to wrap things up for tonight, in Group A, You Only Live Twice has 9 points, the maximum. Looks like Brazil in the World Cup. On Her Majesty's Secret Service has 6, so those two are definitely going on to the next round. And then it's going to be a matter of A View to a Kill with 2. Obviously, Tomorrow Never Dies with 1 is out. So, and then let me see. Group C, our winner is GoldenEye with 8, followed by Dr. No with 6. So that means that You Only Live Twice is the only Bond movie so far to get a perfect score. That blows my mind. So GoldenEye with 8, Dr. No with 6, Moonraker with 4, and Quantum of Solace with 0. So Quantum of Solace is on the bottom, and right now Moonraker is over View to a Kill as the current wild card, but we'll see how we do in our next show. So, all right, guys, we've done our yeoman's work here on sifting through groups A and C. I guess on our next episode, we will be doing groups D and F because they're like the mirror image of these two groups. You got a 1, 6, 9, 12, and a 3, 4, 7, 10. So go ahead and mark down on your calendars. We'll be doing groups D and F. Should I go ahead and tell the folks who they'll be hearing next time?
Sure.
Group D is Thunderball, Live and Let Die, The World Is Not Enough, and License to Ill. And Group F is Goldfinger, Skyfall, The Man with the Golden Gun, and Octopussy.
There's a lot of good movies in there.
Mm-hmm.
Tough choices will be made. Friendships will be lost.
Oh, too late for that, my friend. My former friend.
Somehow we came out of this episode with me and John as best friends.
And I hate you both. All right. Any last thoughts, John?
Watch out for blips.
Jared, last thoughts for this episode.
Christopher Walken is an unstoppable force.
He apparently was tonight. No kidding. All right. Well, I enjoyed this. We went through some good Bond movies, and hopefully this format will work. We'll see hopefully we'll get some feedback. So this will be going out on the White Rocket Entertainment feed that the White Rocket Show and our other stuff goes out on. Be sure to go on iTunes and rate the shows. And by all means, follow us on – we're all on Twitter. Some of us are on Facebook, too. And let us know what you think about it. And if we need to make any tweaks to the format, we can do that before our next episode coming up probably in a couple of weeks or so, 2 or 3 weeks. So I guess the On Her Majesty's Secret podcast will return, huh? All right. See you later.
Good night.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Hello there. This is Jared Albrick, a.k.a. The Yard Sale Artist, with a quick podcast promo for my show, Comics with Normies. Here's how the show works. Using my yard sailing skills, I acquire a random comic book from a yard sale. I then give said random comic to a normie. A normie being a person who doesn't normally read comic books. Then, on the show, I'll sit down with the normie to discuss the issue, get a real outsider's point of view, and see what some of the comics that we love, and maybe not love so much, seem like to those normal folks we see walking around on the streets each day. It should be a fun perspective and good for a few laughs. You can check out the Comics with Normies podcast, along with some other fun-filled podcasts from White Rocket Entertainment, on iTunes and at whiterocket.podbean.com. And feel free to join the show using Twitter handle at Normies Podcast or on Facebook at Comics with Normies. Once again, you can find Comics with Normies on iTunes and at whiterocket.podbean.com. We'll see you there.